Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hello.
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 You pod.
To win the game. That's the great thing about sports.
You pod to win the game.
All right, welcome back into You Pod to Win the Game. I am Jory Epstein with Yahoo Sports here with Charles McDonald. We are in an apocalyptic New York City / Brooklyn area where the skies are orange. It smells like smoke inside and outside. But we care about you guys so much, we're still bringing you the podcast. So, C-Mac, how are you doing?
I'm okay. I don't know if I care about the audience that much, but I'm going to power through anyways. I'm here. So maybe I do care. Maybe I do care a lot. But yeah, it's crazy outside today. Like you said, the sky's orange, and it's even worse than it was yesterday. Because I was out yesterday when we had got back from Jets practice. I was, you know, bopping around Manhattan for a little bit, and It was pretty gnarly outside yesterday, and today's even worse. For people who don't know, like, it's about 2:45, and I have gotten confused whether it's like the evening, you know, several times today because of how dark it is outside. So we should maybe think about taking care of the earth a little bit as we move forward from this. But I'm not sure we're going to learn any lessons. So I'm just going to power through this and then probably take a nap.
Really a good point. I mean, it was actually funny you say that. So we're recording this on Wednesday. Tuesday, C-Mac and I carpooled out to Jets OTAs, like the great teammates that we are. And I think I'd gotten a little bit hazy while we were watching practice, but it had rained that morning, so I thought it was just that. Then we go inside for interviews. I'm inside the Jets facility, 1:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. I get out 6:30, and I walk out and I'm like, okay, clearly it smells strongly of smoke. And I just like look at the nearest Jets like facility employee. I have no idea what his role was. And I was like, is there a fire? And he goes, yeah, in Canada. And I was so confused. I was like, maybe he means there's like some sort of Canadian factory in the area. And then you drive home, you get back to New York City, you're going over the bridge and there's still total smoke everywhere, and you start to realize something is up. But yeah, then it got better and it got worse again. So if you're listening to this in the Northeast, stay indoors. Our air quality sucks right now. But also, if you are indoors and you need some entertainment or information on your favorite NFL teams, we got you. So we are going to start off with some football news. We're going to get into the Cardinals and the tanking job or lack thereof. We would never, ever, ever accuse someone of tanking. And then we will get into the major quarterback storylines heading into minicamp this coming week. So starting off, the gambling news continues. The Colts cornerback Isaiah Rogers Sr., he not only is under investigation for gambling, he says he takes, quote, full responsibility for violating the policy. According to an ESPN story, a sportsbook account was opened under the name of an associate of his. Approximately 100 bets were placed on the account over an undisclosed amount of time, including on Colts games, per ESPN sources. Most of the bets were in the $25 to $50 range, but at least one was low four figures. C-Mac, what do you make of this? And if he was betting on Colts 2022 games, he wasn't betting on them to win with Jeff Saturday, was he?
If he was, then Look, man.
Then I think he should be not. I don't think he should get suspended if he was betting on them to win. That is just like true football guy faith in the team.
Well, you know, I remember when I was doing the fantasy football podcast with Harmon, and we were talking about how a Reddit post caused people to put money on Will Levis going number one overall to the Panthers, and you know, we described those type of bets as a donation to the sports book. And that's kind of like what Isaiah Rodgers is doing here if he's actually betting on the Colts to win last year. I mean, dude, come on, man. I understand having some faith and some belief in your team, but geez, I think the serious note here is, man, you already saw Calvin Ridley do this. Like, that's the one-time Kenny big that you get. To me, I actually do understand when players like Jameson Williams, and you see reports saying, you know, a bunch of players, they don't know that, oh, I didn't know that I couldn't bet on other sports while at the team facility. I can see, like, how a loophole like that might get you. I certainly don't know every rule of every workplace that I've worked at, but you know the big ones, right? You know the ones, like, you really, really can't do. And, you know, betting on your team, even if it is, you know, most of the bets were in the range of $25, $50 being reported, even if it's like, you know, especially for an NFL player, that's not a whole lot of money, but still, you gotta adhere to the rules. This is like the major no-no, and if this is all true and the NFL figures out, he's gonna be suspended for a year at minimum. You know, it's a tough situation.
Right. And I think at first when I saw, oh, another player under investigation for gambling, I was thinking, like, if this is him betting on college football or even, as is against the policy at the facility, betting on horse racing or kids sports. I mean, you can't do anything. And if you work for the NFL and you're not a player, you can't even bet on those outside the facility. At first, I was wondering, like, well, will you reach a time where the NFL is like, hey, we want integrity of the game in that regard, but we also don't want all of our players sidelined for this policy that no one's really paying much attention to as we continue to endorse gambling with a Super Bowl in Vegas and formal partnerships with teams. Maybe they're just going to have to, like, loosen or at least cut out some parts of the policy. But if he's betting on his team, I mean, you don't want that from anywhere. And again, on one hand, you say Calvin Ridley is the example because we saw he bet on his team, suspended a year, and he's a rare player who has a chance to make it back because of how good he was and how good he is likely to be. You can't do that if you're not that good. My other thing here is, though, Calvin Ridley bet on his team to win. The Colts went 4-12-1 last year. I just can't imagine that he was constantly betting on them to win if he was betting on them during that part of the season. And so this could be, if the allegations are accurate and those facts line up, and we don't know yet, worse than what Calvin Ridley did, because I'm just picturing someone sitting in a team meeting and being like, well, we don't know what we're doing against this team this week, and then betting against their team. So you can't do that. And I think that while it starts to feel a little repetitive, the announcements of the suspensions, you've got to think that NFL players will just be like, hey, like, put it away. Don't risk it. It's not worth it. The average NFL career is 3 years. If you lose one, you're really in a bad shape.
Right. And I think that an important clarification, like, even from, like, this to the Calvin Ridley situation was, you know, by the time, you know, Ridley had started his gambling, he was away from the team. Like, he was away. Isaiah Rodgers played in 15 games last year, started 9. It's a little different, you know, like, we have a player who's actively playing in these games, betting on them. It's a lot different to me than someone who's been sent home by the team betting on the games. You know, the Calvin Ridley stuff at the time, even though I understood why it was wrong, but I also understand, like, how you can get caught up in something like that if you're just kind of sitting around at home for months on end and you get a little bored, you got some money to spend, and you messed up. This you know you can't do this. And here's how he knows that he can't do this. The official suspension hasn't even been announced yet, and he's already apologized. So Isaiah, we'll see you in 2024, maybe, hopefully. But yeah, that's a wrap on his 2023 season. I think it's safe to say.
Yeah, absolutely right. This is one of those things where I'm just wondering what legal advice these players are getting, because often when we see guys mess up, we're like, hey, you should probably say something before speculation runs wild, and they don't because of advice from lawyers. And here with him, with the Lions players, we continue to see very early statements as soon as they're like, hey, we know this isn't going well. And Isaiah Rodgers said in part, he made an error in judgment. I'm going to work hard to make sure that those mistakes are rectified through this process. It's an honor to play in the NFL, and I've never taken that lightly. I'm very sorry for all of this. Which also, you should note, there's no gambling, no betting, no specific confirmation of what he did in the statement, even though we've got a full paragraph on a note stock addressing the current reports, and I quote, taking full responsibility for my actions. So we will continue to see this, but I know some of y'all are like, hey, I just want to know about the X's and O's, but this isn't going away, and it's definitely going to continue to impact your teams, because like serious players are getting suspended for serious amounts of time. Moving on, we have the Bills and their defensive line. They signed Leonard Floyd, one of your top five most interesting free agents. We talked about him a little bit last week. They extended Ed Oliver. C-Mac, what do you make of this move, and particularly what will Leonard Floyd do for the Bills and their potential still Super Bowl window?
I guess it's like a light version of what the Rams were doing a couple years ago, because you have, you know, this version of Von Miller coming off injury. You have Ed Oliver, who's like a, you know, a super discount version of Aaron Donald, I guess. Like on the Ed Oliver, Grady Jarrett, Aaron Donald kind of player, you know, your Ed Oliver is like the probably like the bottom tier player in that group that you would want to extend. But I like what they're doing. You know, I think, you know, even getting Ed on that $17 million a year deal, he's still a young player. Like he's still someone that has time to improve. So I wouldn't even be surprised if a couple years down the line, we look at that contract like, wow, he probably should have gotten closer to 20 based on his production. But we'll see what happens there. But I think, you know, when you look at what the Bills have up front, Ed is coming back. He's locked in. Von's locked in. Leonard Floyd's locked in for this year. So that gives you like a trio, right, to work with. And then you have younger guys like Greg Rousseau, AJ Espinosa, Boogie Basham. So they're trying to build some depth up front. And I think that, you know, we talked about it last week, getting someone who's had almost 30 sacks over the past 3 years with like a low of 9 sacks in the season is going to help. Obviously, playing against Aaron Donald, playing with Aaron Donald is a big plus. But at the same time, you know, he's going to get to play with Von Miller. He's going to get to play with Ed Oliver. So it's still a pretty good situation for Leonard.
Absolutely. And I think that what really interests me about the Ed Oliver signing, and you and I talked about this yesterday when we were out at Jets, is we've now seen Jeffrey Simmons, the defensive tackle with the Titans, extended from the first round of the 2019 class. We've seen the Giants extend Dexter Lawrence. Now we've got Ed Oliver, and he wasn't quite in their range, which I think was fair relative to his production, although it's so hard to quantify interior defensive line production. But we've still got a pretty notable admission with Quinnen Williams of the Jets, his defensive tackle, all-pro season last year, 12 sacks, and he's doing it on like two-thirds of the snaps that Dexter Lawrence got 7.5 sacks on. I asked Robert Saleh, the Jets head coach, about this yesterday. I'm like, how eager are you to get this done? And he said it's going to get done. He'll be at camp. He's not concerned. But you have to ask why it's not. And I talked to a general manager this week who was like, this is like the easiest deal of the season to get done. 4-year structure. That's what they've all been. Kind of like that $24 to $25 million right above what Jeffrey Simmons got from Tennessee. If they want 5 years, they better be willing to pay $27 million. I mean, when do you think that deal is going to get done? And do you think the Ed Oliver one impacts it?
Oh, I don't think the Ed Oliver deal has anything to do with this one. You know, we talked about this yesterday at practice about like the type of money that Quinnen should be expecting. You know, he's in the Jeffrey Simmons, Daron Payne tier of guys, Dexter Lawrence, who just got paid recently. And all those guys are, you know, on an average per year base, about $5 million more than Ed. So I don't really think that this should impact that whatsoever. The biggest thing is for the Jets, I would have to guess it can't be the player. It can't be the contract, because those two things are very straightforward, I think. It to me, it's got to be about like the kind of cap difficulties that they're going to be dealing with over the next couple of years. And you know, I'm curious to see, you know, if this deal does get done before the season, what does that look like from a cap perspective? Like, are they going to be able to lower Quinnen's cap hit? Because that's not really the big deal for this season. It's kind of going into next year where the roster really gets tight. You know, according to SpotTrac, they're projected to have around $160,000 in cap space for next year. Or maybe actually it got increased to about, you know, $350,000. But still, you know, you're playing tight.
From an NFL salary cap standpoint.
Right, from the NFL salary standpoint, that's like change you find on your couch when you're cleaning up on the weekends, you know? So they're going to have to rearrange some things. I think that's probably a big piece of like what they're looking at, you know? So once we get this Quinnen Williams contract done, like how is that ripple effect going to affect the rest of our roster? How are we going to be able to keep our depth? Because the truth of the matter is like you need Quinnen in a bad way this season to get this window done to try and really compete for a Super Bowl. That's the Jets' goal, to try and win the Super Bowl this year, especially, you know, as your quarterback turns 40 next year and his cap hit's still pretty big. He's going to be a really important piece of that.
Yeah, I think it will get done, and I agree. But at some point, you just got to ask, like, I don't think the terms are changing much, and it's not really worth this continuing to become an issue, continuing. I mean, like, he's got his whole Twitter profile right now, defensive tackle for the dot, 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 dot. Like, he will ask for a trade at some point if he doesn't get this deal. And I'm not saying they can't solve that, but I just don't think you should get there. Like, you need your guys in-house. You want him continuing to build this culture. You can hear the way his teammates were talking about him this week, how much he means to them, how much he frees things up for the linebackers. And they don't have the luxury of just trading away one of their all-pro players when they brought in Aaron Rodgers. So,
yeah, we'll he's only 25.
Right, yeah. I mean, he played so well last year, and we have reason to believe that wasn't his peak. So I'm excited to see where he's going. But definitely a contract to keep an eye on in addition to some of the quarterback ones we've got. On the other side of the country, the side of the country with less orange air at the moment, the Arizona Cardinals, they do not seem like they are all in on 2023. What do you make of what they're doing? And I want to talk about DeAndre Hopkins in a minute. Before we get back to him, what's going on with them? Like, what can we even expect of them this year? What can we expect of Kyler Murray's future in Arizona? Like, help me out here.
Oof. I mean, this year, I'm not sure if it was this show we talked about or somewhere else, but like this is like the year where you watched a lot of Red Zone if you're a Cardinals fan. There's not a whole lot here to get excited about. And I was just kind of confused at why they cut Hopkins. To me, that doesn't really seem like a super coherent move. I don't think, like, if you're trying to be, you know, one of these teams that's going to acquire assets in a hope to, you know, exercise those assets in the future to try and get something going, why not try to get anything for them, even if it's a day three pick? That was a little bit confusing for me. But as far as this year for the Cardinals, I don't know what your expectation realistically can be, because it's not like you're going to start the season with Kyler Murray out there. And you know, you're putting in a whole lot of young guys. They're gonna have to rely a lot on their rookie class this year. So, I think this is like they're setting themselves up for the growing pains year. That's how I'll put it. A growing pains year. That's what the Cardinals are setting themselves up for. So, we'll avoid the T word there, even though, you know, maybe get me off camera and we'll see how I really feel about it. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one reason you cut Hopkins when you do, if you're the Cardinals, is they'll have this $21 million dead money cap hit this year, according to overthecap.com, but that means that they're not dealing with it over the next 2 years. And so when you look at some of these teams that are kind of in between, it's like, we're going to bite the bullet now. We know this isn't our year. We don't want to still be dealing with this in 2024. We don't want this to be a multi-year liability. What I think is interesting with Hopkins is that same general manager I was talking to, I was asking him about, and I'm like, what do you even make of, like, what is the market for Hopkins? Like, when is he going to get signed? What does this come down to? And I thought he made some good points. He basically broke it into four categories, and he said, this is a player the starting point is obviously that at his peak, DeAndre Hopkins is an all-pro player. He's had some really great years. They're a few years removed. His last Pro Bowl year was 3 seasons ago. His last All-Pro was 4 seasons ago. In Arizona, he did not have the same success that he had in Houston. He also didn't have the same health that he had in Houston. And so there's all that background. But when you look at sort of what a team is considering, here the general manager said, okay, first, you have an older declining player whose availability is in question. So when you're signing him, how are you structuring that contract? How much of it is incentive-based on, hey, every game you get X amount more that you're available? What can you actually expect him to add, and how much are you willing to sacrifice? Then you have step two, which is that teams have spent their cash in a lot of ways. Like, free agency is over. The draft is over. Some guys signed right after. Like, this move came late. It didn't come in January or February, and it wasn't necessarily something that was sure to come. Like, it seemed that Hopkins wasn't going to be in Arizona, but there was an expectation for a trade. And my understanding is that I think the Bills kind of had the outline of a trade for DeAndre Hopkins outlined. It was going to be about a $10 million base, get to 12 is what I was told. Then Odell signs with the Ravens. They give him $15 million, which still blows my mind. And it's like, oh, well, then why am I getting 10 or 12? And that kind of blew everything up. So I don't have that fully, but that's what one of my sources says, that they thought that it was DeAndre headed to the Bills, which also tells you something about the position that the Bills think that they are in. But if they're just signing Leonard Floyd and they're kind of making some of these other moves, I don't know that they're still going to be in it. And I certainly don't think they're still in the Hopkins race at that price point. Number three is he's still got this productive skill set, but is it still valued by the market in the same way that it was when the game looked a little bit different several years ago? And the last one is, I don't think there's a lot of like off-field character issues with Hopkins, but the point that this GM made is, from a football character standpoint, this is a guy who has made pretty clear he doesn't like practice at times. He didn't play last couple games of the season, which I don't think the Cardinals were super happy about. And he's always been this number one option in the passing game. And so you have to ask yourself, is he going to be cool with being number three or number four in a progression? What is that going to look like? How much is he going to be willing to mentor the younger receivers or someone else? Like, let's say he had gone to the Jets, which I don't think he is. Is he going to mentor a Garrett Wilson type like a Randall Cobb might? Obviously, the on-field production might be something. So all of this is to say, like, it might be that now his guarantees are more like 7 or 8 than 10 to 12, and he might not get signed until training camp. So that was the framework that was laid out to me, but I'm curious what you think when all that goes through your mind, C-Mac.
I mean, it's all logical, and I think that, you know, it's part of the reason why if you're DeAndre Hopkins, this time around, you might want to sign an agent, and he did. It's easy to figure out what your market is, I think, when you are, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, first team All-Pro receiver type. That's easy. I think now, especially at this point in the offseason, training camp starts in 5-6 weeks. It's probably a little bit more difficult to try to figure out not only what this money looks like, but also I think we've seen this a lot, especially, you know, with great players. As you start to get not so great, sometimes that can be a challenging thing to grapple with. So, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, like he might need to. I don't know if this is where he's at. He might have another season where he can be a number one receiver for a team, but you know, he might be in a situation where he needs to look at it like, okay, well, I need to go somewhere where I can be a 1B or even a 2 somewhere, so I can kind of have some more success and prolong this thing. I'm surprised we haven't heard, you know, I guess in the past couple of days, a little bit more talk about him going to Kansas City. Because I think just like from a where are you now and what does the team need in terms of like skill set, it makes perfect sense to me. But maybe he's just going to weigh this out and see where it goes. I saw that it was reported he had a workout with the Titans. I don't know if that's where you want to be right now, DeAndre. I would wait this out and see what your options are. But I think like the last thing that I have to say about Hopkins is, how do you think he feels about the Odell contract? Because Hopkins played last year. you can at least give him that.
He played the full year the year before.
It's tough. It would be tough to swallow. Like, yo, I've been great more recently than he has been, and he got you know, all that money backed up in the signing bonus. So maybe that's going to be where he can still get his money and the team gets their cap relief. But it's a tricky situation that he's, you know, trying to work through right now.
Right. I mean, the reason the Titans make sense is, yes, Mike Vrabel and DeAndre overlapped 1 year in Houston, but even more so, offensive coordinator Tim Kelly was DeAndre Hopkins' offensive coordinator during that time when he was an all-pro player. And so he really understands the ins and outs of how to get him to produce, what his skill set is, and also how to push the buttons to make sure that he is at his best. Does that mean that they want to pay him $10 to $12 million? I don't know. And I think we kind of speak maybe out of both sides of our mouth when we say, go get what you're worth. Don't, like, I know you had comments when Joe Burrow was like, I want to make sure there's money left for other guys. There's that aspect. But then on the other hand, you also have to be realistic about where you are. And even if it feels unfair that Odell is getting that money and you're not because you think he's a better player, that doesn't mean that at this time of the year, someone is willing to pay you that. Odell also got that money, in my opinion, in part because they needed Lamar back and they needed to show him some olive branch. And they're like, hey, we'd rather pay him a little bit of money for 1 year than pay Lamar fully guaranteed for 3 to 4 years. So I think you have to understand the variables surrounding the situation that sometimes aren't just about the player and how much he's worth independent of the situation. So it makes sense to me that he is going to Tennessee for a workout, given those pre-existing relationships with the coaching staff. I don't know that that means that they're going to shell it out. Like you said, is it the best quarterback situation in the league? I would say no. Is it better than an injured Kyler Murray? I would say yes. And the other thing you have to think about is Hopkins just went on a podcast and was like, here are the quarterbacks I want to play with. Here's what I'm looking for. And while I don't want players to be sanitized and I admire the honesty, I think that once he gets to a building, he's going to have to realize like what a team needs from him now versus what they needed from him 5 years probably looks different. And if you want to get paid, you might have to be a little bit amenable to changing that.
Go to Kansas City, man. Be a power forward among a bunch of guards. Do it. Makes the most sense. And, you know, I would love to see Patrick Mahomes just to see like what that late career Hopkins and Mahomes and Kelsey thing kind of looks like together. I think it'd be fun.
Yeah. I will ask you, you're more X's and O's savvy than I am. Ryan Tannehill's skill set, DeAndre Hopkins' skill set, how do you view those meshing together? What does that look like to you?
To me, it more depends on where Hopkins is right now. Because I think that Ryan Tannehill, his skill set right now, as he enters, you know, towards the end of his career, is pretty clear. Like, his best stuff to me is, like, you get him going in play action and just kind of let him fire intermediate and deep stuff. Like, when he was with A.J. Brown and Arthur Smith, like, that was kind of where they saw the most success. Down the field. I'm not sure if Hopkins is kind of that guy right now. I do think, like, when he was at his peak, his separation skills got undersold. But now, like, he actually might be closer to, like, a jump ball guy. And if that's kind of going to be the spot where he has a lot of success, because I feel like Tannehill over the years, he's had more success with guys who can, you know, catch and run and kind of make things happen after the play. But the windows might be a little smaller this time around.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. The other thing is, I did not expect in February that we would be talking in June about a Derrick Henry still as a member of the Tennessee Titans. So maybe the Titans, because we believe in having a theme for your team and taking a philosophy, maybe the Titans should just lean fully into offensive players past their prime. You get Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, DeAndre Hopkins. You know they were once great. You don't worry about how great they are now, and you just roll and see what happens. Or maybe they shouldn't.
They don't have a choice now. If you're not going to tank, you might as well just try to get as many good players as you can.
Yeah, right. When are you trying to succeed? But yes, all right. Well, that is our news runaround. We're going to throw it to an ad break real quick. And then when we come back, we will walk y'all through the major quarterback storylines heading into minicamp.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Coming back in, major quarterback storylines headed into minicamp, and this is a little bit of a misnomer for the name of the section because we're starting out with the New York Jets, who canceled their minicamp because they're playing in the Hall of Fame game and returning early to training camp. That said, one more OTA, you'll be out there Friday, C-Mac. We watched the quarterbacks yesterday. We found a new best friend in quarterbacks who doesn't yet know he's our best friend, but we'll keep y'all posted on that because C-Mac and I have something fun cooking if we can pull it off. But what we do want to talk about now is Zach Wilson. If Aaron Rodgers goes down, what do the Jets have in Zach Wilson?
It's tough because I guess the way that I would, you know, describe what I saw from Zach Wilson yesterday was kind of the same stuff we saw last year. And if that's where we're at, then I don't know. I think, you know, one of my biggest takeaway from Jets camp was, wow, when Aaron Rodgers got going, there were parts of practice where he was absolutely shredding them, right? It's not like he's throwing against like scrub cornerbacks. You know, Sauce Gardner and DJ Reed are one of the better duos in the league, and he was making some pretty impressive throws. But once you get past that, you know, you're looking at Zach Wilson, Tim Boyle, Chris Strievler. I understand like the complaint that some fans have and some people have with this team where you're looking at like, you guys might need to prowl around in that backup quarterback market because obviously if Aaron Rodgers goes down for the whole season, you're screwed no matter who your backup quarterback is. But let's say like you're in the middle of the season and for two or three games, you need someone else to start. I'm not sure that they really have a viable answer for that right now. Like as far as a player who can keep like a playoff hopes alive for a short game stretch, that's something they probably need to work on. Just a little insurance behind Aaron Rodgers. I mean, he's 39. You never know like what these guys kind of look like as they age. Not everybody's Tom Brady. So just a little insurance would be smart for them, I think.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. Like we have to remember the backup quarterback the Jets had last year, Mike White, now in Miami with the Dolphins. He was a really good backup quarterback. He was like teetering on is he going to be capable of starting? And last year, he started four games, completed close to 60% of his passes. He also just had this moxie that I'm looking at his stats now and realizing they don't sound quite as great as I thought they would. But it wasn't that he was great. It was that he allowed the people around him to sort of do what they needed to do. And we haven't yet seen enough to know that Zach Wilson will do that. The best thing that the Jets backup quarterback position has going for it right now is that Aaron Rodgers has been super vocal. We have been able to see in practice, he's constantly talking to guys. I don't think you can talk a guy into having a skill set or a level of confidence that he hasn't had immediately. But I do think that when our colleague Charles Robinson talks about the Zach Wilson project in a 2 to 3 year span, I think it could help because this is just a level of command of offense that Zach Wilson has probably never been, or not probably, he has not been around. But that's not necessarily going to get you ready for September. And the Jets have a lot riding on this season. So I don't know if they bring someone in. It seems like you probably should have done that already if you really want someone you like. I mean, if you're them, are you trading for someone? Are you looking for someone on the market? Like, do you just think they're dealing with what they have? Or do you want them to make a move?
I don't know. Maybe this is a situation where you see what happens in training camp, right? You see who gets cut. You see who's still out there. But, you know, I think it's kind of a tough situation that they're in because, look, the the most functional Jets quarterbacks last year were like Joe Flacco and Mike White. Neither of those guys are on the roster anymore. I get that they're in a tough situation with Zach, right? Because you pick him number two overall. These contracts are fully guaranteed. It's not an easy contract to cut when nobody, you know, really wants the player who's attached to the contract. That wouldn't even be an easy trade to pull off because it's not like the team who would be acquiring his contract, you still got to pay him. You know, this is CBA negotiated fully guaranteed contract. So for the number two overall pick, that's not a small penny for someone who's not going to be playing much. I think they're probably going to have to end up looking, you know, seeing where Zach's at in August, seeing where Tim Boyle's at in August, and then, you know, monitoring who's getting cut, who's on the trade market, who can be had for, you know, a conditional seventh round pick type of player. But they need some insurance just in case. Like, this isn't predicting that Aaron Rodgers is going to get hurt at some point this season. It's just a just in case, you know, you need something a little bit better than what you got.
So let me give you some names, C-Mac. Carson Wentz still on the market. Matt Ryan, unclear if he's retired, technically still on the market. Nick Foles. And then the other one I'll give you, not looking at the free agent list, but the San Francisco 49ers depth chart at quarterback currently goes Brock Purdy, Trey Lance, Sam Darnold, Brandon Allen. If Brock Purdy gets healthy, which he's ahead of schedule throwing, that doesn't mean he'll get there, but I think that the Niners will have enough of a sense by late training camp of what they have in him and Trey Lance. Do you try and get a Brandon Allen type? I mean, which of those guys, if any, are you trying to get in your room as a backup?
I mean, honestly, if I had to go with one, it might be Sam. Like just as a backup, you know, like, because Sam had some moments last year where, you know,
I more mean Brandon Allen versus Free. I mean, I don't think the Niners are part of Darnold, do you?
I don't at all. But like, if I was the Jets and I had to pick one backup, you know, let's assume Brock Purdy is not available. Well, Sam makes sense, but you know, maybe even look at a Trey Lance trade. I don't know, but that would be pretty desperate because I don't think he can be had for cheap, even with you know how his career has gone so far. They still invested 3 first round picks into him. He's still a talented guy. You would want to hope you can get something back that's a little bit more than okay. Contender needs to plug their backup quarterback hole real quick. Let's throw a 7th out there and see what sticks. You know, I think, you know, if Brandon Allen makes sense, but you're right. It's tough at this point. I don't think you want to even walk into a situation where like Matt Ryan's your backup going into the year. Cause even he looked pretty cooked last year. So fingers crossed, Aaron, you got to stay healthy all 17 games and you got to lead us to a Super Bowl. It's time.
Okay. Well, now y'all know the Jets backup options or lack thereof. So everyone, for the sake of interesting NFL seasons and Charles and I having fun things to report on in the New York area, root for Aaron Rodgers to stay healthy. Moving on, Indianapolis Colts, Anthony Richardson, trending toward being the week one starter. We know Jim Irsay wants to keep things relevant. What do we have going on there?
He's their best quarterback. He should start. That's how I feel about it. There's like two schools of thought on, right? Where you can sit a guy, and it really just depends on the player. Like, you can sit a guy and have them learn from afar, like, you know, Aaron Rodgers did, like Patrick Mahomes did, and it can work out. But some guys, they just need to learn trial by fire. You just got to take the lumps as it comes. Personally, I'm a big believer that you get better at playing football with live reps. I honestly think that part of the problem with that is it's not so much about like the quarterbacks and the players that play early. It's more that, you know, we have a leash that's a little bit too tight on some of these guys. Where, look, a 21-year-old rookie quarterback is gonna make mistakes, and that's fine. Like, it's part of the process. You know, you kind of gotta hope you can get these kinks ironed out year one and year two, so that, you know, year three plus, like, you have a real viable franchise quarterback, and Anthony might be that guy. But I had to take, and a bunch of smart people did during the draft season, like, when you go back and watch the Florida games, he's a lot closer to being a guy that can be on the field than not. You know, I think he was honestly a victim of his circumstances in a way that I don't think was really talked about enough, but he still went 4th overall. So clearly, you know, the Colts, they see something that can help kind of help them get moving immediately. But his competition is Gardner Minshew, you know. If you're fourth overall pick, like, isn't,
which is really extremely tough competition in the facial hair game.
It is. But, you know, Minshew's a quality player. He's had some moments. He's like the quintessential guy that I would think of when I say, okay, we need someone to come in and start for a few games and not sink the ship. Like, he's one of the guys that would come to my name first. He's a good person to have in this quarterback room. But at the same time, like, your fourth overall pick should be separating himself from Gardner Minshew. He's really talented. And if he's got, you know, if he's starting to work on, you know, cleaning up some of the footwork issues that can cause some of the passes to sail, he should be the week one starter for this team.
Right. I think you outlined the challenge well, which is not who's the best quarterback in a general stretch. It's what are your goals? Are your goals to win two of your first six games versus three to four of your first six games? And maybe you're not winning that many. Or are your goals to develop your quarterback of the future, to have a clear leader in the locker room, to get a guy who didn't have a lot of college snaps behind him, more snaps, and maybe you can do it in a way that, I guess, allows him to succeed to the degree possible. I think that I would trust Gardner Minshew to run the offense and lead them to wins early in the season more than I would Anthony Richardson, but I don't know that that is the ultimate goal. And I think that putting Anthony Richardson in there, having Gardner Minshew, who, as we talked about, this whole knowledge of the system, Aaron Rodgers helping guys learn Hackett's system. Well, Gardner was in Philadelphia with Shane Steichen. He can help Anthony Richardson. And if I'm Shane Steichen, I'm also saying, like, let's not open up the whole playbook right away. Let's try and say, here are a few concepts or a handful of concepts that we start with. Let's also let him make moves and use his athleticism. And then as we build on that and as we get increasing comfort with that at the line of scrimmage, then we add on to it. So I think it does help. And maybe this is just having been in Dallas so long with the Cowboys spotlight being so bright. To me, it helps that this is happening in Indianapolis and not in New York, not in Dallas, not in Pittsburgh, not in one of those markets where, or not in Boston / New England, in one of these markets where all of the eyes will be on you. And oh, by the way, like, you look across the division, it's not like they've got the best quarterbacks in the NFL. So I think that this is a guy who, by all accounts, like, everyone's talking about his smile and how he lights up walking across the facility and brings this energy. And I know we hear that, but you're hearing it kind of a rare amount for him. I think that there are a few aspects of the structure that can allow him to fail gracefully is the wrong word because it wouldn't be fail, but to learn and grow and have growing pains gracefully that might give me more confidence that it won't wreck a guy like him than it might someone else.
You know, talking about him, I think as you just look at all young quarterbacks, like, failing early is okay.
Right.
You know,
part of the road to success.
It's part of the road. Like, I don't know many people that, like, the first time they try something, they're just, like, super elite at it. And clearly, if you're willing to pick someone at the top of the draft, the growing pains are worth, you know, sticking through until they get to be just, oh, this is who you are. You know?
Right. But I think that if the Colts start him early, they shouldn't start him early because they're trying to validate the fact that they picked him fourth overall. They should start him early because they believe that he has a skill set that can be extremely beneficial but needs sharpening and needs snaps. Like, I want that. And the other reason that you might do it is, let's say Gardner Minshew starts. He wins two or three games for them because he just knows what he's doing. Well, then you have, like, are you going to, like, piss off the locker room if you pull Gardner Minshew? So I think that's another reason why you might not want to risk that at the start versus, hey, maybe later on in the season.
Yeah. Look, you got a rookie quarterback, rookie head coach. I think it's okay for them to try and, you know, grow and figure this out together on the fly.
All right. We touched on the 49ers quarterback depth chart, but nonetheless, we have so many questions and we really can't have all the answers now. I will say what stuck out to me. I was reading Kyle Shanahan's press conference transcript this week and I just crack up of, like, I know these guys can only say so much at the podium. I know that there's not a perfect answer, but he just keeps being like, yeah, I don't know how he's doing. I don't know how Brock Purdy's feeling. I don't watch every time he throws. I think he's throwing three times a week. And I'm like, you can't say, I know everything that's going on. I've got this full hold on the organization. That's my job as a head coach to be everywhere and everything. And then also be like, I don't really know what happened. Like, just pick one. You can say, I don't want to talk about it. I'd rather you did. We actually had that at Jets this week. I think it was yesterday when I was asking, I think it was Guard Lakin Tomlinson, something about Rodgers. He goes, I don't want to Oh, no, it wasn't Lincoln Tomlinson. Who was it? Was it C.J. Mosley? Maybe it was Lincoln when I was like, hey, like, what do you think? Blah, blah, blah. Like, give an example of how Aaron Rodgers is impacting you in meetings. And he's like, actually, that's too much. And I'm like, no, keep talking. But all that's to say, I don't really buy that Kyle Shanahan doesn't know what's going on.
Of course not.
So what do you think is going on? Make it up, because Kyle Shanahan's not going to be straightforward with us. So you get creative license here, C-Mac. What is currently happening in San Francisco and what does it mean for September?
I'm just going to steal what George Kittle is saying. He's saying that Trey Lance looks the best he's ever looked right now. So maybe this is Kyle being like, maybe I don't want to go back to Brock Purdy. Maybe I want to try this Trey Lance thing one more time before we move on for good. Because I do think there's actually some merit to that idea. You've already sunk.
This is going to be the video we cut for social.
You've already sunk a lot of assets into this. And honestly, like, it hasn't worked out so far for freak reasons, more so than like anything else, right? And this goes back to 2020 with Trey. Like, 2020, you have the COVID season. He only played one game. Then you get drafted number 3 overall by the 49ers, who already have an established starter in Jimmy G. Jimmy G misses a couple games. He played quarterback. There's a couple moments where you're in on some Wildcat stuff and you're playing. Then you get the actual reins in 2022, and you break your leg like week 2 of the season. It's not like this has been Trey Lance failing per se. Has he not been as good as they had hoped? I don't know. Maybe, but there's still like enough intriguing talent there. He's still young enough that I think like he really should be a factor into the starting quarterback position, especially if Brock Purdy is a diminished form of himself. Because the thing that I worry about with Purdy is he's not one of these guys where, you know, it's overwhelming athleticism, overwhelming arm strength, where if you have a serious injury, like, you know, an elbow injury, you can kind of come back from that, because let's say you at 80% is still a lot better than what guys can give at 100%. He's not one of those like physical outliers like that. So, you know, I think monitoring where he's at is actually going to be important. And given the talent that got Trey Lance drafted overall, number 3 overall, with all the draft pick compensation, he should be a player that really factors into his quarterback situation.
Yeah, no, I think you've got a great case, Kyle Shanahan, since you probably have a lot of time on your hands, since you're not watching anything going on with your team. Come listen to what C-Mac is telling you and factor it in. While you were saying that, I was trying to find if we have like odds on the next 49ers starting quarterback for this season. Unfortunately, they've not been updated since March, when Trey Lance was ahead of Brock Purdy. That said, if you're wondering, Trey Lance also is fourth most likely per BetMGM to win comeback player of the year. Damar Hamlin's number 1, which he's probably a lock. Tua's number 2. But Tua is tied with Russell Wilson. And I had trouble believing that the great people of the NFL are going to say, Russell Wilson, you came back from Nathaniel Hackett in Denver and you having your own office. And that is more impressive than Damar Hamlin coming back from cardiac arrest on the field.
I would be very shocked. I mean, I'm going to imagine that Damar Hamlin is like usually when you look at these things.
He has to do something to lose it.
Okay, right. Because usually when you look at these things, right, and you're looking at MVP, Coach of the Year, Offensive Player of the Year, that award stuff, you're almost never going to get like negative odds on something. Like, what's the odds on Damar Hamlin when he comes back?
Yeah, -350 in the next.
Okay, so that's unbelievable for an award. You know, I think all you'd have to do is play in like one game to get it, probably. You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look, he earned it. He literally came back to life.
So on that Russell Wilson note, though, because he is one of our major quarterback storylines. Can Sean Payton fix him? Can Davis Webb fix him? Is he going to be a steady quarterback this year? And on a scale from let Russ cook Seattle hype days of not that many years ago to what we saw last year, what do you expect Russ to do this year?
I honestly think this is going to be a bounce back year for Russell. I don't know if it's going to be
comeback player of the year. See, voting for him.
let's be careful here. You know, I don't want to wade into the discount DeMar waters, because, you know, I'm not one of these people that thinks he's a stunt double or something. So that would be spectacular if he actually plays this year. But looking at Russell Wilson, It was just maybe I'm off on this, but it was one of those situations where, for me, like the drop off from year to year, from his last year in Seattle to his first year in Denver, was so stark that I feel like there's some middle ground in between where he can kind of get back to be a competent player. And Sean Payton is, you know, as good as they come as offensive coaches that we've seen in this era of football. I mean, obviously playing with Drew Brees helps, but I mean, he's been able to get through games and have, you know, productive offenses with Taysom Hill starting at quarterback for like a month at a time. He's not just, you know, relying on someone like Drew Brees, which is, trust me, as a Falcons fan, it was very annoying. It was really annoying. Like, those Taysom games sucked because they used to beat the Falcons with Taysom all the time when Sean Payton was the coach. So, you know, I think that this will be good for Russ. I think it needs to be good for Russ because if not, like, they don't really have a chance in the division. Mahomes is still there. The Chiefs are going to be the favorite, I would imagine, just about every year until Mahomes retires. So you kind of need to get this move in right now. But I do think that Sean Payton is a good spot for him.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll be better. I mean, you and I were talking with someone in the Jets organization about this yesterday as we watched Nathaniel Hackett kind of coordinate the office at practice. And the way I put it was, it's kind of like when I have friends who I like and they're like, hey, should we go out? And I'm like, look, you guys are both great. You decide if you're compatible. And I think it's one of those things where Russell Wilson has had a lot of success in this league. Nathaniel Hackett has had a lot of success in this league. For whatever reason, and maybe it was reasons outside both of them, maybe it wasn't, it did not work last year, but I don't think that the overall body of their career suggests that both of them can't rebound. And so I think, like you said, Sean Payton is the guy to get it out of them. I think they still have a really good defense. I mean, there's definitely a lot of potential in Denver. That makes me think that I'm not saying they're going to be like running the AFC. The AFC is stacked, but I think they should be a competitive team this year.
Yep. Yep, I fully agree with you. The defense is, they're going to be loaded again. They should be really good. They added some pieces to it. They added some pieces to offensive line. I mean, it's just, Russ, like, this is kind of all on you, man. You're the one getting paid the big bucks. You're the highest paid member of the organization, I would assume. So, come on. Let's ride.
Well, come on. C-Max ready.
Let's all right, ride.
Let's ride. Our last quarterback before we get out of here is Jordan Love and the Green Bay Packers. Jordan Love is not going to be Aaron Rodgers in the MVP. Prove me wrong. Like, that'd be great, but he's not. So what would success for Jordan Love look like this year? Is it developing some good chemistry with the receivers and showing ability he hasn't shown before? Is it keeping them competitive in the division when Detroit is probably the favorites now? And hey, by the way, while I keep trying to discount the Vikings, I also forget that Brian Flores is their defensive coordinator and I kind of trust what he's doing. What does Jordan Love have to do to not only get that second year of his contract, but to make Green Bay feel good about the decision they made?
That's a tough question. He's somewhere where I kind of struggle on what the expectations should be, because on one hand, he's only played like a couple of games. But on the other hand, he's been sitting behind Aaron Rodgers for like 3-4 seasons now. And learning from also from what we know, Matt LaFleur is one of the better offensive minds in the league. So this hasn't been like a totally...
Aaron Rodgers didn't tell you that, did he?
Oh, no, I don't think so. Continue. It's a tough thing to kind of put expectations on, right? So look, in ways, like, this is not a bad spot for him. The offensive line... They re-signed Elgin Jenkins. Bakhtiari is still there, and it looks like he's going to play a lot more football than he did last year. You still have a really strong RB duo with Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. You're going to get Christian Watson in year two. Romeo Doubs is coming back. It's not, you know, overwhelming core, especially a receiver, but it's good enough. You know, it's better than what a lot of other younger quarterbacks are going to be working with this year. So I think that he kind of needs to come out and play well. I would say that a successful year... Like maybe the bottom for what a successful year looks like for Jordan Love is maybe top 15 in like quarterback efficiency stats. I think that that's where I would put the expectation on him. I mean, dude, you were a first round pick. You've been sitting for a while. It's kind of time to produce. So I think for him, the Packers should be looking like, how can we keep this offense in terms of passion efficiency be a top 15 where he's also a playmaker for them and not kind of a bystander on the offense?
Yeah, I think the reason I like what you said is because it's not specifically about production so much as it efficiency, and efficiency probably is more likely to correlate with decision making. And that's also why I would say, well, you don't want to be terrible at the beginning of the season and you don't have to be the best at the end. I want to see constant improvement over the course of the season once you're actually getting time in that offense, having time to go back, study the playbook, knowing what happened last week and go out. Like, I need to know that you are more capable and equipped and showing that and your teammates seeing it in November than you were in September. That to me is something that I would be looking for.
Yeah. But again, I don't know what this is going to look like because you know, for people that I've talked to, it's like basically up until last year, it was like, ooh, this is a little shaky. But then, you know, you talk to a lot of people, especially once training camp started last year, they felt like they saw a new Jordan Love. It felt like he was starting to get confidence in who he was as a player. And he's a talented guy, man. Like when you're talking about like all the physical attributes that you're looking for in a quarterback, he's got it. Big arm, athletic, can run. And we'll see like what the accuracy and command the offense looks like, but I feel like there should be some expectations placed upon him. Like, you got the contract extension, the 1 year deal on the extension that you were kind of hoping for. You got the physical attributes. You're playing with Matt LaFleur, good offensive line. I don't know. Got to produce, I think, this year.
Yeah, and I think Jordan Love would agree with you. I mean, he's the type of guy who would want that expectation, would want to rise to meet it. I don't know how many of y'all listening to this have the chance to see much of him personally, but awesome guy. And like, when you talk to him, you're like, he's got it in terms of like leading that locker room. I just love having conversations with him. That's not enough to be the NFL quarterback, but I do think that I would trust him to take in stride any early growing pains and any, hey, he's not Aaron Rodgers conversation. Right. So
it's a good situation for him. I think the NFC North, to me, it's wide open. So go take advantage of it and be a legend this year.
Yeah. Hey, if he can win that division, that is not going to be anything small. If he can go in and be like, look, the Lions might be great, but we're going to show where their weaknesses are. The Vikings have this insane year that they're coming off of, but they were frauds. And oh, by the way, we've owned Chicago for this long. Why stop now? Like, if he can do that, he's going to make a name for himself real quick in Green Bay. So it'll be fun to watch. That is all we've got for you guys today. Before I take us out, I would say on my end, wrote a couple stories from Jets yesterday, one on the Quinnen Williams contract dispute and sort of the dichotomy between the Jets being like, it's going to get done, and the rest of the league being like, what the heck are y'all waiting for? And the other one, which is a fun story to write, was about defensive end Carl Lawson, who essentially said that God sent him a sign to stay and take a pay cut and play with Aaron Rodgers. If that sounds crazy, it's even crazier once you read the story and see where he's coming from. This wasn't just put out there with no context. He also let us know that they have fresh fruit and bison in the cafeteria at the Jets. So if the overall context of the story was not enough to make y'all want to read it, I think the bison should be. Also wrote on my interview with Tom Brady and what he thinks about Mac Jones and Bill O'Brien and what he can expect in New England. So check that out. C-Mac, take us through what you've already had this week. And also, I think you've got something else coming this week.
What I read this week. Okay, I wrote I did write something this week. I was just saying, like, did I just get put on blast? Did I write something this week?
No, I did. I read it.
Yeah. I wrote the top, you know, five teams that kind of missed a window to add, you know, a crucial piece this offseason. Going back out to Jets practice on Friday, we'll have another, you know, couple buzzy type things this week, and I think on Friday I'll do some actual reporting. So yeah, we're gonna have a few more things before the week ends, and you know, hopefully C-Rap can get his internet back next week so he can finally join us on one of these podcasts.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I don't know when C-Mac's writing it, but y'all stay tuned for when he writes about Will McDonald and just some of the defensive line buzz at the Jets, because this is what I love about going out to camp with C-Mac, is he's a former college defensive lineman, if y'all didn't know, and he asks questions like someone who very much has played defensive line, understands the nuances of the position and what it means, and the players really respect that. It's obvious when they answer his questions. So stay tuned for that. I'm excited to read it. Other than that, we will be back next Thursday. That is Thursday, 7 plus 8 is June 15th. And on Twitter, come check us out. We've got CMAC at 4Verts. I'm at Jory Epstein. follow at Charles Robinson and hope that he gets his Wi-Fi back so he can tweet something at you. And our producer behind the glass, Stone, is at SJ Rochelle. Help us keep Therese Paler's legacy alive. Go to BreakingTea.com/Therese for the All Juice tea or hoodie. And you can also support the Therese Paler scholarships at Howard U and Mizzou directly. Also check out our new NBA podcast, Ball Don't Lie, featuring Vince Goodwill, Jake Fisher, Dan Devine, and Kristen Peek, as well as our new MLB podcast, Bandwagon, featuring Hannah Kaiser and Zach Kreiser, both available wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review, tell your friend, and come listen to us again next Thursday. We'll see you then.